Okay, so we're now joined for our first live interview for the program by Fred Fuentes, who is a regular Green Left writer on Venezuela and has also been a long-time solidarity activist with Latin America. Specifically, Fred has done a lot of writing on the experience of left governments in Latin America, specifically focusing on Venezuela and Bolivia. So we have Fred on the program to kind of talk about the kind of, the kind of massive military buildup in the Caribbean Sea, which is targeting Latin America. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on this excellent program. Always important to be able to be out here and talk about such important issues.
Yeah, awesome, Fred, to have you on air. What can you tell us about the US military deployment in Latin America and specifically around the Caribbean Sea?
Yeah, so look, I think the first thing to say is that this deployment, must be opposed, because of the real dangers that it poses to really all of the countries in the region. In terms of the specifics of it, what we know is that essentially since mid-August, the US has been deploying various warships into the Caribbean region. Now, there's been a bit of conflicting information about exactly how many warships have been deployed and exactly where they are in the region. But we're sort of, if we add up all the information together, we're talking about the possibility that there's something like eight different warships, a nuclear submarine, some 1,200 missiles, and possibly up to 5,000, sorry, up to about 6,000 US Marines, all sort of in the Caribbean region. So as you can see, this is a quite a large military buildup that's been deployed in the area and which poses real threats in a number of different ways.
And what can you tell us about the aim of the deployment, and what does it kind of reflect in terms of the broader foreign policy trends by the Trump administration within the United States?
Yeah, so if we listen to the US officials, I think we could separate out what are potentially two different sort of aims that they've at least publicly stated. The first and the one that they emphasize the most is that this has to do with fighting what they refer to as narco-terrorism. The context there is that earlier this year, the Trump administration basically labeled a whole bunch of drug cartels as terrorist organizations, which obviously mean that they can then be dealt with in quite a different manner than from what a normal criminal organization would be able to be dealt with under their legislation. So that's the official guise that they're deploying it on to fight these drug cartels operating in Latin America and supposedly flooding the US with drugs. Now, within that, we also have to include the fact that the US has very specifically targeted the Venezuelan government in this context. It has labeled President Nicolas Maduro as the head of a drug cartel, in particular referring to the Cartel of the Suns, a cartel which, it should be noted, even US intelligence reports have questioned whether it even exists, let alone whether it has any connections to the Venezuelan government. And the Trump administration also, only a few months ago, increased the bounty on information leading to Maduro's capture to something in the vicinity of $50 million. So obviously there's the general sort of issue of fighting drugs, and then there's the very specific targeting here of the Venezuelan government, which the US government has directly tied and said is involved in drug trafficking. Having said that, that's on the public level of what the US administration is talking about. But I think if we want to go a bit deeper, what we really have to understand about this deployment is that really what the US government is seeking to do here really is change the whole rules of the game. Now, of course, it's been trying to do this at an international level, but it's now playing out in its own region. And I think here fundamentally what it's seeking to do is firstly established the idea that itself, the US, is the big power in the region and is the one that can decide what happens. So it's thrown out any attempts of multilateralism. It hasn't even bothered doing as what it would normally have done in the past few years of trying to convene gatherings of the Organization of American States to get up votes in that body with its compliant governments in the region supporting its aims. And it's just setting out, look, this is our aim, and we're going to do it, irrespective of what anyone else thinks about this, irrespective of any of the previous rules of the international rules-based order. And secondly, it's showing that it's willing to not just to do this in a symbolic fashion, but to do this very concretely. And we've seen that through the military strikes on at least three, potentially four boats in the region. Really actions that can only be described as extrajudicial executions. With no attempt to board the ships, to find out who's on the ships, what's on the ships, investigate what's happening. So really a very dangerous precedent that breaks all kinds of international laws and even US protocols for dealing with drug trafficking and drug boats. So, you know, we're seeing very dangerous precedents being set here. We're seeing a reshaping of US foreign policy. And all of this is being carried out supposedly under the guise of fighting narco-terrorism, of which the Venezuelan government has been linked into. So a dangerous situation, which, as I said, you know, really has to be opposed.
So, Fred, what can you tell us about the kind of response from different sort of Latin American governments to this US military deployment? Have they kind of condemned what the US is doing? What kind of resistance are they giving to the US's kind of aggressive posture?
Yes, so quite a number of the governments have been quite outspoken in opposing this, of course, because they understand the dangers of it. Two, perhaps, of the most outspoken countries, unsurprising, because they have, you know, in many ways also been targeted as part of this deployment, are the governments of Colombia and Mexico, yeah, both of which have progressive sort of centre-left governments in power. Now, why I say they're also targets of this deployment is the fact that, you know, again, only a few months before this deployment, the US administration was very clearly talking about the fact that they were preparing or at least planning for the possibilities of land strikes on targets that they deemed to be part of, you know, as I referred to before, narco-terrorism. So they've openly talked about that. And in fact, only just last week, the Washington Post, basically released papers that, you know, again, were an open secret, but now were confirmed, where the Pentagon had prepared and offered up plans to the government of where they of how and where they believed such strikes could be carried out on Mexican soil against, again, so-called narco-terrorist criminal gangs. So they've been particularly outspoken. Gustavo Petro, the president of Colombia, has sought to try to call an emergency meeting of the governments, or at least of the foreign ministers of the governments in the region to discuss a unified plan. But I think so far that's been perhaps the biggest problem, that most of these governments, while being very clearly outspoken and not afraid to sort of confront the US government, and that's led to retaliatory action. So we've seen that in the case of Colombia, where the US government has, as a result of Petro's brave stance, what it calls decertified Colombia, and that is saying that taking Colombia off the list of countries that are supposedly cooperating with the fight against narco trafficking as a first step towards sort of punishing Colombia. These governments have been outspoken, but as yet haven't been able to really get a united response, and that's really what's necessary at this point in time. Like in the face of such a dangerous and such a big operation that the US is carrying out against the whole region, what's really needed is a regional response. And as yet, you know, that's maybe in train, but it's certainly not there yet, and really should have been there a lot quicker, given that we're talking about, as I said, a military deployment that began in mid-August and which really can be dated back, you know, to the beginning of this year with Trump officials openly talking about this possibility.
Fred, it's Mary. Good morning. How are you?
Oh, good morning, Mary.
It just blows my mind that this is just such a clear example of the US acting like a rogue state, just assassinating people without any evidence or, you know, following, as some of our politicians also always talk about, the rule of law, which would mean you arrest those people first before you would just assassinate them. So it's just... it's mind-blowing that the US can get away with this. What do you think should be the response of people in Australia and maybe even our politicians?
Yeah, look, I think you're right, because in terms of the rogue state element, because, look, let's be honest, it's not like the US hasn't done, you know, stuff like this before. But I think what enters us into new and dangerous waters is that, you know, previously, you know, things like attacks on these boats would be kept quiet or denied, and generally it would only be until whistleblowers sort of released videos of such sort of crimes carried out by the US government that they would be forced to respond. But here it's quite the opposite. Here they're the ones openly posting the videos and openly boasting about the fact that, you know, they could have intercepted the boat and investigated, but they consciously chose to, as I said, extrajudicially execute these people. Mm. So it's very much a rogue state that has assumed its role as a rogue state and openly proclaims that and is proud and boasts of that fact. So I think that puts us in a position where we definitely here in Australia need to be calling on the Australian government to call these actions out. I mean, you know, Albanese, on the one hand, he'll talk tough about Trump and disagree with some of Trump's policies, and then, you know, the next week he'll be grovelling back to the US, sort of saying, well, sure, we might have some differences, but, you know, we can all work together. Well, I think this is one of those times where, you know, very clearly the Australian government has to come out and say, look, just even at the level of basically accepting international law, you know, this is clearly wrong, clearly must be opposed, and clearly it's time for governments to speak out on that. So I think we should be seeking to get the Albanese government to say something, which, it has to be said, up until this point has said nothing on this particular issue. So it is beholden on us, because, as I said, the dangerous situation, I think we are certainly in a position where we're creeping closer and closer to where the US actually starts doing land strikes under the same guise. I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen, but, you know, the problem is that, you know, Trump's going to have to be able to sell something out of this whole deployment. You know, it's not enough to just do symbolism. He's going to be able to, you know, prove that this whole military deployment has worked. And I think one of those avenues he has is to see whether he can get away with a land strike, because, as I said, at this point in time, it's not clear whether beyond sort of the declarations of opposition, there'll be much more opposition towards it. Were the US government to carry out such strike, whether that's in Venezuela, Colombia, Mexico, or anywhere. In fact, even if we look at the boats that have been hit, only really now and just recently in the last few days, Colombian President Gustavo Petro at the United Nations was the one that said, look, actually, these things have to be investigated and people, you know, brought to justice under international law, because these are illegal actions. These are just daylight executions being carried out that contravene all sorts of different laws, and people have to be held responsible for these. So, you know, that's a good start, and that's the kind of sort of position that the Australian government should also be taking.
Yeah. But he's also attacking his own people within the USA with those ICE agents killing people with, you know, not following the rule of law. So this is a rogue state internally and externally.
Absolutely. And look, and the two can't be separated out. The two can't be separated, because really, yeah, what we're seeing is both a militarization abroad along with a militarization at home.
Mm.
But the other reason we can't separate it out is that the US government has very much in its discourse talked about the idea, and here Venezuela is the prime target. It's not the exclusive, but the Venezuelan government is a prime target of sort of saying that these governments and these narco-terrorist drug cartels are responsible for the disturbances and the troubles we have at home. So we see that direct link that's been made between the two by the government, and you can not rule out the possibility that, you know, on the one hand, the strikes are carried out elsewhere to argue that this is necessary to protect, you know, the situation at home, but that also this whole, you know, sort of crisis situation, you know, basically, you know, sort of semi-warlike situation in the Caribbean isn't also used to further justify crackdowns within the US on the basis that, well, we're having to deal with the internal sort of fallout of these narco-terrorist organisations who have infiltrated into the US and are causing all sorts of problems for us. So there's a very direct link there as well.
Yep.
All right. Thanks a lot for this interview, Fred. Do you have any final comments you want to end on?
Yeah, look, the only thing I could say is just once again, I really want to emphasise that this is a very dangerous situation, not just because of what it might mean in the immediate term, in terms of, you know, will there be more boats struck by missiles? Will, as I said, will there possibility of be there of land strikes? And you look, and we can't even rule that it could go further. I think at this point in time, you know, the idea of a full-scale invasion of any countries sort of seems remote, but remote doesn't mean impossible. So all these things are at play. And as I said, they fit into a broader framework of how the Trump government is trying to reshape world politics, try to reshape basically get rid of the whole international rules-based order, which, of course, we could have a big, long interview and discussion about its weaknesses. But in the face of that, replacing it with a might wins out kind of great powers sort of politics is certainly not the world that we want to head into. So I think in that regard, you know, being able to, as I said, the broadest possible response we can do, involving all the different Latin American governments that are speaking out, involving all of the different left groups, trade unions, you know, who all of them have very different positions in regards to how they view the governments of Venezuela, of Colombia, of Mexico. Some are more supportive, some are more critical. But really, this is the time where, you know, whilst we can maintain those differences, for us to be able to seek those points of unity to see if we can successfully push back this military deployment and make the Trump administration pay for this, rather than allow them to get away with setting a dangerous precedent for the world we're heading into.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Fred. And just to inform listeners as well, Fred actually has some interviews available on Green Left that you can kind of read about this kind of particular topic. But thanks again, Fred. And I think this has been a very informative and very important kind of discussion.
Oh, once again, thanks for the opportunity to be able to speak on your excellent program.
Bye, Fred.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.